or should, one or the other. John White ahead as well. Stay with us. Second half at the races. SiriusXM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule and average daily purses of six.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.
And off.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back and looking for Mike Welch, but I think we're going to reach for Shug. And that effort failed too. All right. So I guess we will. Let's make the move rather than me vamp, and we'll see if we can't get Claude Ray for a few minutes to entertain us. Because he's the greatest. Early on in the day, Saturday didn't look like it was going to be a. Well, all right, no Shug either. So all right, we may have to go to Plan B for a couple of minutes until we hear otherwise from one or the other. Because Shuggy may call back. or Mike Walsh could walk. Mike Walsh could walk in here any second. All right. We gave you the right. I gave you the Sam Houston. There we go. And obviously, we'll talk to Nick and get some of the details. But in the Ladies Classic, in particular, Pauline's Pearl 4-1, and they bet Amos in here 63 caliber. She went off at a tick under 3-2, and Hidden Connection at 4-5 at what'd she go off at? She went 180. So Pauline's Pearl goes off as the third choice. Unbelievable. Pays 10-20 in here and was in hand and in command. So I don't think anybody that was backing Pauline's Pearl expected to get $10 on her. Last year, what'd she pay last year? Last year she was 3-5. And so she comes back here and repeats. In the Ladies Classic. That's her seventh win in 16 career starts. Hadn't been seen since July. And I guess people just, I don't know, thought off the layoff, I suppose. But if she wasn't going to come back successfully, and if they didn't think, I mean, if there was any reason to believe that Pauline's Pearl wasn't, still a viable mare, this was her first start as a mare, but Stone Street would have bred her. Why, right? If she wasn't 100%, if she wasn't giving an indication, getting ready for this, if Scott Blasey and Steve Asmussen had said, well, Barb, she's just not the same. She's not really coming back to hand. Fig wise, 93. Which is right in her, that's her wheelhouse. That's what she is. So you would imagine that this gives way to, something moving toward Churchill and the La Trienne, which she won last year. Yeah, I maintain she's a Julie. She's a Julie 2.0. No, nice win. Stewie Elliott aboard for Asmussen and Stone Street. And, of course, this went out of hot Dixie chick. and here I knew Shug would call back. That's thanks, Shug.
Hold on, Steve. I'm at the doctor's office, so I'm not going to be able to do it now.
Oh, all
I thought
right.
You were going to do it at 9:40. But I think I'm okay tomorrow morning.
You got it. We'll call you tomorrow.
All right, thanks.
There we go. He's the greatest, right? Who's better than Shuggy? Because everything got kind of flip-flopped when Mike Maker said, I'm tied up, so we moved up Mig. I should have, I guess I could have called Shug at that spot. Yeah, but then I don't know. This is what you do. It's on the fly. Mike Welch on his way down here too. All right, back to the results from Sam Houston, and I guess I could have asked Maker about the horses. Not some of the ones that he had potentially lined up to ship to Sam Houston, but Scarlet Fusion, Joe Sharp for Carl Moore. And Brad Grady, this happens to be a Stone Street himself, the five-year-old, Adam Biskitza, the Biscuit, aboard, wins the Connolly, and got a square enough number, 980 in here. Another mystery for Chris Block and Jason Barkley with Spooky Channel. And boy, they bet Spooky like the race had already been run. they bet Spooky down to even money. Which was a little overly aggressive. Another mystery 380 in the Scarlet Fusion 390. So that was the other graded stake, and the rest of the action at Sam Houston. How about, and the winner is the Oscar Performance. Oscar Performance you better sit up and take notice, because he's getting his share of winners. Mrs. Moulton bred this one out of her Scat Daddy mare, Run Like the Boss. Corey Lannery with a head win over the favorite, the even money Private Creed, the Asmussen Mike McCarty, and then the two state bred events, Vietnam Victory, a Klimt gelding that CJ bred, CJ Thoroughbreds, and owner Jim Stadola for Brett Calhoun, winner at a fat 15-2, paid $16.80 with Jose Alvarez. And Ray Lou Gutierrez, 7-2 on Is It Tis, this a My Golden Song for Billy Clevenger, homebred. David Gomez sent out It's a Tis. There was your Sam Houston action. And here is your remarkable. You want the mic?
Yeah.
You prefer the mic? You can have the mic rather than the headset. All right. Come on. There we go. Whoop. Not too. There we go. That's better. Mike Welch joins us. And for those of you that were paying attention and for those that utilize the invaluable DRF Clocker report, you were told that Mage for Gustavo Delgado in the second race in a very deep and interesting group of maidens, that Mage was live enough based on morning machinations to take a shot with, and maybe you wanted to use Bourbon Resolve second, and if you did,
it's a good payoff.
You had a big day. You were
way to start.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well done, Mike.
Yeah, thank you. Doesn't always work out, you know, but in that case it did. There were some question marks with other first-timers in there, especially the Bill Mott horse, which there was a lot of steam on him. You know, sometimes you just don't know what you're up against, even though you're kind of playing a horse that you like that you saw. In this case, it worked out. Bill's horse did not produce, and George Weaver's horse, who also had some steam, got in some trouble early when the three-horse rider lost his iron, and, you know, worked out well. Got 11-1.
Well, and not only, you know, was the performance and the result for those that went in that direction, not only was that productive, this horse came back with an 89 buyer. This is a potentially serious three-year-old, and why not? Good magic out of Puka. She was a very nice stakes horse.
Yeah, I mean, he's shown speed several times in the morning, and I might have been a little conservative on the grades on him. It's just sometimes it's just hard. B's, B pluses. It's you get, you know, drawing a fine line there. But it's I always tell everybody read the comments in the. In the workout report, and the last report, even though it was a B-minus, because it was basically a maintenance move, the comment was caps off a very promising series of works, and that more than the grades and anything else, I think. He also worked with a maiden that we had good works on a few weeks ago from the Acker Barn that won and paid $54 first time out, and it was noted in Daisy Doozy, I think it was, that he had worked head-and-head with him, too. So,
wow. And as if you hadn't helped people enough with a $25 winner, Bourbon Resolve was your second use.
Yeah, I mean, of the ones that had run, he looked the most logical. He had a good work from Mike Vesey coming off his last race, and you know, experience does count in those races too. That the other thing with the first time start is 7/8 is not my favorite distance to play a horse. First time, we were all talking to the clockers that we'd have rather seen this horse come out of three quarters, because we knew he was fast, but 7/8 can be a different ball game, but worked out well.
I'm going to walk through the card a little bit, Mike, and we'll build up to the result. I want to just get some you know, feedback. I hadn't even mentioned that Mott basically opened the day and closed it, because Wonka, an allowance winner in the first for Ellen J. Foxwoods, a twirling candy filly, that it an exciting opener, actually.
Yeah, and he had a big work here, too. I think we gave him a B, borderline B-plus, maybe, if I remember right. Came over and, you know, got stretched his legs over the main track here before running and drawing in off the AE list that you weren't paying attention.
Yep.
You know, and then when you draw in, you're poorly posted. Not easy to win from out there, turf or dirt, you know, from post. Was it 11 or 12? What did he have?
Was the 13 saddlecloth left from the 12 hole?
Left from the 12. So, you know, even if a horse is doing well, it's tough to win from out there. So, yeah, I mean, Bill had a terrific day. A couple of the horses that I think he thought might run better didn't, and we
exactly.
can talk about that later.
Exactly.
Or now, if you want, Obligatory obviously was a major disappointment.
And Wakanaka
didn't produce, and the horse at the second race that came well touted, he didn't run at all either. I did talk to Bill about Obligatory yesterday, and kind of scratching his head a little bit, not quite sure what to make of it. He said he can't use the excuse that she doesn't like the racetrack because she won a stake here last year. He did say, I brought her back a little later last year, and maybe, you know, I should have waited a little more with her. But, you know, he's just going to have to wait and see, you know, moving forward now. He says, you know, you can excuse one bad race with Philly sometimes, but if she were to come back and run another one, they might consider, they have the time to perhaps send her to the breeding shed. But right now his plans are up in the air. He's just going to wait and see how she's doing the next few days.
In fact, what's funny is that the two longest prices that he sent out, Wonka at 8-1, and then later we'll talk in a minute about the Pegasus result, 15-1. And if you bet the short prices, you got nothing. I don't know if you saw my tweet. Was very pleased to see Mohammed Mubarak get a win on a big day. As he what's he got about 7 or 8 horses?
Yeah, he's down to, you know, maybe a half a dozen now. This horse trained well too. We've seen that from him before, especially on the Tapita. I think Mohammed always thought though that this horse was going to be better on the grass than on the Tapita, and you know, he was coming off a pretty good effort last time and came back with a good work, and the race worked out, you know, paced out well for him, and came running down the center of the track. Yeah, it was nice. I always root for Mohammed.
I do too. And this was a horse that he tried in the Virginia Derby
and ran well, actually. You know, not terribly.
No, he ran fine.
I think he had a bad trip that day or compromised a little bit. But
yeah.
You know, this was nice to see. I mean, the horses' buyer numbers keep going in the right direction.
Yeah.
Was working well, so there was a lot to like about him.
No, this is a serious horse. Ended up with a 92 buyer, so a career best as well. And keep an eye out for that one. Mose for Mott as well. That was nice for Jane Lyon to get a photograph. And, of course, Jane, one of the finalists for Breeder of the Year.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, Bill started off really well. This horse,
I forgot about this horse.
Rallying from last, which is kind of the way to go in a Tapita. I think you see more of that kind of style winning now than on the lead there, as opposed to the turf, which is a little more the other way around. This was a wide-open race on paper, I thought, and the two Ortiz brothers wound up 1-2 in here, Kahiko running second.
Out of Zinze, the big smart strike mare. This is a nice family of Jane Lyons. Nice. And this one, Uncle Mo, that'll end up in the broodmare band at Summer Wind. One of the biggest opportunities of the day, Vinny Viola, Mike Rapoli, Todd Pletcher, Irad Ortiz, 12-1 winning that turf allowance, first time grass up to the mark.
Yeah, those kind of numbers, results, payoffs with those connections lead me to believe maybe that this horse surprised them a little bit too. It was kind of like, you know, let's just take a shot on the turf after all these dirt races that, you know, maybe didn't pan out. The horse has always been a pretty good workhorse, and Dave Norton had good works on him going into this race too, and I mean, he—you could see it. They have Milepole. He was going to win when he cranked up on the outside there and just kept coming and coming and coming. It looked like he was going to be the winner, especially from the top of the stretch home. So it was a big effort, and I'm sure, you know, now these guys have found a new avenue for this horse.
Unbelievable, and I mean, I only actually started handicapping from about the Le Prevoyant on. So I had not looked at this in terms of pedigree work, but that's the reason you do the work, you know, to look for any potential clues. I mean, for that horse to be 12-1, and it ended up with a big fig jump too.
It was a visually impressive effort.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, when he started cranking up at the half mile pole, you could see he was going to be pretty formidable from there.
And I want to quickly glance here, looking at American Produce Records, which is just a fabulous resource in terms of, you know, looking up pedigrees. We talk about from Briz, and not a lot to glean. There is a brother, a full brother, that was the first foal. That's a one-time winner, and actually now she's a ghost zapper. She's out of Capote Bell, and makes her a half to Zapper Bell, who was a nice stake horse and won the Pago Hop down at Fairgrounds. Was placed in the Valley View, so there was turf in this, plenty of turf in this family.
Well, I mean, it took them a while to try it. But,
yeah, right.
It certainly worked out.
Well, and I mean, Capote Bell, of course, was a dirt sprinting mare. But all right, let's. Shug is gonna just as you were coming on, Shug. We talked to Shug, and I missed him earlier this morning. So we'll visit tomorrow with Shug. But you know, he was a little frustrated, Mike. And I don't know if you talked to Shug about Perform.
No, I haven't. No, I didn't. I didn't cover those races, and
I watched it with him, and he said he was sort of complaining. he said it's going to be one of these kind of days.
he
was getting a little edgy, but then Personal Best turns around and gets him one of these great Arad Ortiz rides to win the Le Prevoyant.
Yeah, there were a bunch of those for sure on Saturday.
Unbelievable, right? Turning to Wolfie. Wolfie's Dyna Ghost comes back down here for another Tapita win.
Yeah, same race as last year. Bigger purse, different trainer. Last year, Tommy Albertrani. This year, Jonathan Thomas, who's off to a good start at this meet. And, it's not a bad price, considering now he's 2 for 2 on this particular synthetic surface. So, Wolfie was impressive the other day,
and ended up at 13-20. Then the stakes action starts rolling. Mary Quite Contrary, she's good.
It's a terrific story. She's a local filly who's now 6 for 7. All her races are here. She's 6 for 6 with Luca on her back.
That's great.
And she has a particular style. It looks like she just needs to be out in the clear. She's going to get super rag numbers and Thoroughgraph numbers because she's so wide on the turn all the time, but that's the way she wants to run. And it took her a little while to get going, and she was 5-6. She got pinched early and, you know, kind of got into her best stride, but once she did, it at one point it looked like Dale Romans was going to steal this with Fast Time. She was about 4 or 5 in front at the top of the stretch, but I think 3/4 is really what she wants, not 7/8. And you can see from the 3/16 pole home, Mary was going to get it again, and very happy. It was good to see. She's trained as well here as any horse that we've had consistently, for the past 6 months. I mean, when we first saw her training here, you know, we said she was the best 2-year-old filly we saw here last year, and it took her a little while to get to the races, but, she's just continued to work well. I mean, we had B-plus work on her going into the last race that she won, B-plus work on her the other day going into this race. And Lisa Bartkowski is usually the workout rider for her. And she was also out there this morning on Leave No Trace for Phil Serpy. His big 2-year-old filly worked this morning as she's starting to crank back up. I think the Devona Dale will be her target in about 4 weeks.
Well, and the other night at the Breakers for the Eclipse Awards, and I had noticed that the day before, Mark Cassie Wonder Wheel, your 2-year-old champion, she had worked up at Ocala at the Cassie Training
Center. I see she's starting to crank up. Forte is starting to crank up at Palm Beach Downs. So, you know, we haven't seen the real good ones yet, and the Holy Bull is coming up this week.
We'll talk about
that
in a minute.
It's kind of the same horses we've seen so far. I think there's a lot more to see as we move forward. The Fountain of Youth, some of these maiden breakers that could come back. There's an other than with a couple of Todds on Saturday's card that could be potential Derby Trail horses later too. But
A couple of quick notes. You mentioned Dale Romans, and Dale's barn has kind of come alive. That was Fire on Time that ends up beating 3 lengths and change at 16-1. Colorful Mischief was the other filly that I put with Obligatory and Mary Quite Contrary third in terms of my pecking order. But Colorful Mischief was so dead on the board, Mike, 13-1, and never took any money.
Yeah, I was shocked because she had a horrible trip when she was second to Mary Quite Contrary the time before.
I was shocked.
She was my third pick, too. I mean, I picked Mary, and I picked the favorite, and I put her in third, and it was a pretty good exacta. I did not go that way because I just didn't know what to do with Obligatory. It was pretty tough to bet against her not being 1-2 in there. I did play Mary Quite Contrary and was a little shocked when I looked up. She was 4-1 about a minute before post and wound up paying 720.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Colorful Mischief, again, trip players probably had to, take a shot with her at the price if you're willing to, side against Obligatory.
We had a nice conversation with Mike Maker in the last hour, and a Maker trifecta, $275.50.
Yeah, that's amazing. Of course, the third one was pretty tough to come up with. All the others that he had in there seemed, very live. And, this is the race. I think he's won this race five times now. So to go against Mike Maker in the McKnight is a little bit suicidal. So Dave Grenning said we should call it the McMaker moving forward. So
that's like McDowell's in Coming to America.
kind of.
We'll talk about Atone when we get to the Pegasus Turf. Aban was bet the same way Atone was bet, that felt like a mojo horse that everybody had landed on.
Well, he looked like he was going to be loose on the lead until Julian Leperoux decided to make this crazy move with Agitair in the middle of the race and engage him.
Well, he couldn't hold
that.
Agitair was out of control.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. Yeah, I mean, I can't blame Julian for that. But that changed the whole race for Aban. I mean, Aban was supposed to be just cruising up there on the front end, and here all of a sudden comes a horse you never would have expected to see going head-to-head with him and put poor Luis Saez in a real bind. And maybe it wasn't going to make a difference anyway, and maybe Aban is just not the same horse he was before, but that certainly, changed the outlook of the race, at least for him.
Well, Red Knight being outposted in the 11, he ended up with the 860. That gets us to one of the interesting results because, of course, the Hooper will give rise to the Gulfstream Mile, and here is Endorsed, who ends up running in his second choice. They would have run in the Pegasus had there been the opportunity. Maker's done a nice job with this horse, and he's always Medaglia d'Oro out of Dance Card, and one of these high-priced Maker claims that just grind it out.
It looked like a race that you wanted a closer. I mean, it just looked like there was a ton of speed in there. I think the biggest question for him was could he sustain his close for going a mile, because most of his races were at 6 and 7, 6 and a half, if I'm not mistaken. But the race just worked out perfectly, and he got a beautiful trip, and he ran fourth, I think it was, in the classic Pegasus last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Was that him? Yeah.
Beaten nine.
So, and Octane and Dean Delivers, both of them, the two Florida breds, were ding-donging it out for second money. A nice effort to get second for Octane and the Arendelle group. This horse was the top two-year-old here in 21, had some physical problems, certainly is rounded back into good form now. I thought the race might collapse enough where Noble Drama would be the one up there second or third, but he just got too far back and was left with too much to do.
Well, Miles D, much like Obligatory.
It was definitely a no-show. I haven't talked to Chad to see what the issue was there, if there was any issue, or just maybe he needed a race and didn't like the track, or
A lot of times when it comes to big days, when we read Jerry Brown's analysis for big cards, I don't think Jerry did a sheet for a special report for Saturday, but he'll say, watch how so-and-so's runners are running, earlier in the day when it comes to the big races. This might have been an indication when Mish did not lift a hoof that the Safi Joseph horses were going to underperform, because when we get to Pegasus, I mean, that was the biggest disappointment of the day.
But you're talking about Miles D.
No, Mish. But
Mish. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, Mish needs to be up front. There was just too much speed for him. I think he was outclassed. I don't know if I can draw that same conclusion, but Yes, it was very disconcerting, the three performances from Safi in the Safi's horses and the Pegasus, especially the way that White Abario had been training. And Safi said he had no excuses. He's just going to, you know, go back and make sure everything comes out. They're doing okay this week. They were fine Sunday. And they just regroup with those. But, yeah, Miles D was a disappointment. We'll see what happens moving forward from here.
Gets us to the three Pegasus races and the Pegasus pick three, essentially. Looking at the filly and mare race, for starters, Mike, I was shocked. Wakanaka opened up at a very short price, and then I thought, well, Shantasara will overtake her over the course of the next 20 minutes, and never did. Shantasara 5-2, 2-1 for Wakanaka. That surprised me. I kind of had a shined on Queen Goddess, and she was terrific.
Yeah, you know, when I made my selections for Saturday, I had not. The entire workout report was not in because I have to have it in Thursday at 2 o'clock, and I did not see the reports yet out of California. And if I had, I would have picked Queen Goddess first or second, maybe second. I thought there was a lot of speed in there, and the pace could be, you know, legit. And that's why I you know, thought Wakanaka coming off a race where she won a race that two horses came out of and won grade three races out of that race. So it was a key race. Looked like a good pace scenario for us. He just didn't show up. But Queen Goddess, once I saw those workout reports from Toby Terrell out of Santa Anita, they were terrific. She obviously was doing well. She looked like the pace scenario could be a problem for her. And then Louis did an unbelievable job. Took her back off the speed, let her relax, swept three wide. It was an absolutely perfect trip for a horse that was obviously doing sensational, and that's a pretty potent combination.
And 10:40, the Shantasara arrived a little bit late on the scene, and then the late double. And Atone, who was a universal kind of, you know, now horse.
Well, look, it was a terrible morning line at 12-1. I mean, just, you know, Maker, Irad, a horse coming off a win with a figure as big as anybody in the race, a horse that looked like he was going to get loose on the lead. Turned out he didn't. And a horse that also was working terrific. I mean, he was my best bet of the day in the paper for those two reasons. The workouts, well, three reasons. The workouts, his form, and the fact that I thought he was loose on the lead. So that factor didn't happen, and he was still able to overcome. It was a great, great ride by Irad. Once he knew he couldn't make the lead, he just waited and waited and waited and then made the move at the perfect time. And this horse was just so good right now that it was all over. Again, I thought he'd be higher than 7-2, maybe 5-1, but there was no way in ever going to get 12-1 on this horse. So, you know, I think a lot of people liked him because the fact that maybe they did think he'd be loose on the lead, and you know, and the workouts, you know, look good even in the form, even if you didn't have the report. They were fast, but they were fast and done the right way too.
Well, and speaking of fast, we did discuss Friday Speaking Scout and Hurricane Dream, and then I saw Graham Motion, was sitting actually close to Graham on Saturday, and he said that we were the only ones that ran inside the dogs. He said it was kind of unusual. He said they did it. He said he was surprised when the 58 came back.
Well, if you had the workout report, again, Mike had both these horses working well, and he thought Speaking Scout was the better of the two.
Which was interesting.
Which was interesting, of course.
Somebody else, there was somewhere else I saw written, somebody liked the way Hurricane Dream had worked inside, and it was Speaking Scout outside that
I'm just going
Mike
by what
did.
Mike
yeah,
said,
yeah, yeah.
And I value his opinion as much as any clocker around, and it turned out he was correct. Look, I mean, these kind of races, you know, the trip is going to separate some of those horses, too, and it worked out well for him. But, you know, again, of the pair, that was the one that had the better opinion anyway. Mike gave him a B-plus and the other a B, I believe.
Well, Ivar, it did seem that Javier had, you know, worked out a trip and it moved at the right time. I don't think he would have done anything differently with Ivar otherwise.
No, the best horse won the race, I think.
Yep.
And
there you go.
No doubt about it. The horse is in, you know, top form and just maybe had a little more recency going for him. He had run a lot closer to the race than Ivar had, so worked out well. I just too bad the horse, we couldn't have got 5-1 or 6-1, but the nine change isn't bad.
What did you talk to Clement about City Man?
I have not. Marty covered the race. I'm not sure. Look, he was compromised from post 12 to start with. But I think, you know, he might be a notch below that bunch anyway.
That gets us to the feature. And for starters, you know, we all were in agreement essentially that Cyberknife had an issue to deal with the 10 hole. And knowing he was going to be favored, he did get bet. I mean, nobody was scared away necessarily, 2-1.
Yeah, I thought there was a chance that the funded Michael Post would favor it. Again, you know, that you're never going to get 6-1 on him. Baffert and Irad, you almost automatically started at 7-2 or 3 and then work your way down. But he did get played. I mean, on paper, he was the best horse, no doubt about it. And I don't know, you know, if enough people take into consideration how compromising that post is, going 1/16 or 1/8 here, really makes a difference. And Florent, you know, he did the best he could out there, but he wound up getting trapped wide. He grabbed into him a little bit early and maybe took him back a little further than he should have over this racetrack. You know, you just can't win with a 4-wide trip from 9th or 10th in these kind of races here over the main track. So, but he didn't fire his best race either, obviously, for whatever reason. So it was disappointing. But, you know, I mean, I know a lot of players that just tossed him. I mean, they might not have come up with the winner, but I think because of the post and the price, you know, he was one that I can understand if you just tossed him completely and, you know, tried to go with some of the inside horses with decent works, decent form, whatever. And but it was I thought it was tough to come up with Art Collector just because of the way the pace scenario seemed like it was going to play out. Who would have thought that, you know, even if they decided to do this, he would have been able to do this. Now, look, early in his career, his first two wins were sprinting, I think 6 and 7, and he came from mid-pack or maybe further back to win off the pace. And then that was the last time you saw him do that. Once he started going 1 1/8 with his speed, he was always up and on the lead. Hats off to Bill and for Junior to coming up with this plan.
Yep.
It turned out to be the right way. He couldn't have got a better trip. And, you know, we know it's been documented. Luis Saez took off the horse to ride for Peter Miller in there. It's tough to be an agent sometimes and you get put in these kind of positions. But Junior couldn't have done a better job. Nobody could have done a better job than the ride he gave this horse.
Well, and Bruce Lunsford, I think, is joining us tomorrow. And Bruce made that point on the track apron and after the race. And Lunsford said that Junior Alvarado, who likes that relaxed stock trip, Louis is much more into the race flow typically and you know, would draft closer. It just feels like this was a confluence of events and Mott had the horse ready.
Right. I mean, look, Louis rode the same exact kind of race, winning the filly and mare turf for Mike McCarthy. That was the exact same kind of ride he gave. Took her right back, a speed horse. He took her back third, sat 3 wide and won. So maybe he would have, you know, I don't doubt that if given those instructions, he would have done the same thing here.
Sure, there you go.
And Bob Baffert gave me a good comment yesterday. He said, you know, I thought we had a shot. We got to the top of the stretch. And Art Collector had another gear that I didn't think, or that our horse didn't have. And I said to him, I said, he had another gear that maybe Bill Mott wasn't so sure he had either.
Wow.
But he certainly did. And you know, tip of the hat to those connections. And Bill did have him. He said, my horse was training great. He says, you know, you can only know how your horse is doing, not how everyone else is doing. And he says, I know going into the race, we were doing great. I said, did he exceed your expectations? And he said, I really didn't know what to expect because I didn't know what to expect from everybody else. But he said, I knew my horse would run well. He wound up running the same buyer he did when he won the Woodwood. So and visually, it was probably a better race the way he did it. The Woodwood, he was on the lead. You know, like Bill said, you know, a lot of his races, he kind of stole away on the lead. This one, you know, he showed us a new dimension, and it's going to bode well for him, you know, down the road the rest of the year, because now you've got the option of going to the lead if you catch a race with no speed or sitting back and doing this. So, you know, the horse came into the race the highest money earner in the field, even more than Cyberknife.
And, unbelievable.
You know, to get, what was it, 15-1?
15-1.
Yeah, I mean, He wasn't one of my picks just because I didn't think he could do what he did, but he did it.
No, he was an early, felt like an early toss.
And you know, tip of the hat to Defunded and Stiletto Boy. They were up there all the way around, and they held on second and third. You know, granted, a lot of the horses you expect to have run didn't run. You know, Proxy got too far back early. Cyberknife, we talked about. Skippy, just head scratcher, White of Barrio, perfect position, didn't run, get her number, it was no good. Simplification, he was also in decent place early, coming off a huge work, kind of got shuffled back, and once he got shuffled back, and then it came about eight wide, he had no chance. O'Connor, post 12, you really didn't give him a chance anyway, but Safi said, I'm not going to make an excuse for them there. He didn't do any running, and then fortunately riding with Biden, who was eased, come back okay. So that's good news there too.
Well, this group, kind of a different edition of the Pegasus. It so often it had been a showcase, you know, for a horse ending their career and post Breeders' Cup Classic. Art Collector, who I had thought was, you know, after the stud deal had been announced at Claiborne, I thought that this was like Cyberknife, that he was that this was the wrap up, but he's going to be around. It's good for everybody.
I asked Bill that. I said if he had run poorly, was there any talk this be his final race? And he said I hadn't heard that. He said I know going into the season, you know, he said Bruce likes to see this horse and see his horses run. So he said I hadn't heard that. It's certainly, you know, with a stallion prospect, you have longer to make that decision maybe than if you have a mare. No, he said it the other way around. With a mare, you have longer to make that decision. But he didn't think that was ever going to be an option. And the way things turned out, now they're looking forward to a big year. And no plans yet, he said. Bruce was up at the farm at Payson yesterday. And the subject of what's going to be next never even came up.
Well, then we'll watch and listen. And meanwhile, we'll talk, I think, to Bruce Lunsford as well tomorrow. Always fun to celebrate a nice win with Bruce. And, you know,
stud value, which was already being a grade one winner, now being a two-time grade one winner,
and
has increased who knows how many folds.
Exactly, and if he can win at 10 furlongs potentially at some point during the year, continue to build the resume.
I'm sure the folks at Charlestown are already reaching out to him to come back.
He'll run.
He'll be a big name now to get back there now that he's a Pegasus winner and a two-time Grade One winner.
Handle numbers were
very good. Yeah, they exceeded their all-time best in for the day that they set last year by just about 10,000. But it was a great betting card. Look, no doubt about that. There was some challenging races, some big fields. The finale was obviously a terrific betting race with 12 and wide open as it was. So they put on a good show here. They did a good job. Hats off to everybody. You know, they could have had a big problem with that quarantine situation a couple of weeks ago, and they handled it well, and happily everything worked out okay. There's still horses out there now galloping as we speak from the quarantine barn. The track is open now for them, but it's a tough situation for the 100 or 20 or 30 horses in that barn, but hopefully everyone will test negative when they take the tests in about a week or so, and we'll get back to normal soon.
Well, we're back to the normal three-year-old trail toward the Florida Derby on Saturday in the Holy Bull. A quick look ahead, Mike, because the swale for the 7/8 for the sprinters. And
let's just do this race because I got to run and go ahead and start riding.
Not a problem, but you got the swale early. You got some maidens going on the grass. There's an important allowance race that we'll talk about Friday. It goes as the 8th, where Chesterskin.
Todd has the two favorites in there. And,
right.
Both look like potential, like I said earlier, possible Derby Road candidates.
Exactly. And the Kitten's Joy for the three-year-olds. It's all three-year-olds. The Forward Gal gets the fillies rolling as well, and the Swedish Chant for the fillies on the grass, and then the Holy Bull, which it seems a little light on star power, but there's a chance for some breakout stars. I suppose Cyclone Mischief announced himself. We talked to Dale a couple of weeks ago after that mile romp and the 90 buyer, and it would be great to get Dale on the Derby Trail.
Yeah, I'm going to guess this horse is going to be the favorite. He ran like he trained going into that race. He got the absolute dream trip. One off, you know, his first time Lasix, first time Tyler. You know, there was a lot to like about him going in, and he produced. Now, you know, those that believe in the bounce theory could say that going from a 79 to a 90 buyer coming back in 4 weeks could be possible that he's going to regress a little bit off of that, and he's got to go back around two turns, although he's already won around two turns, so that shouldn't be an issue. He worked here the other day. Maybe not quite as strong, I thought, as before his last win, but again, you don't want to be doing too much, too, coming off a win like that. So we'll see if he could come back and reproduce that effort. Would be nice. I agree with you. It's always great to have Dale on the Derby Trail. Legacy Isle, 3-for-3, at least finishing first across the wire. Kind of a bit of a controversial takedown in the Mucho Macho Man. I thought he ran pretty well, setting a very fast and semi-contested pace to hold on and hold off the closes. So we'll see. The number in the race came back kind of soft. He's going to have to step forward from a figure standpoint. He worked well here the other day, and the rider switch from Jaramillo to Saez. Rocket Can for Bill Mott. We talked about this horse. He's an improving horse. It's two races around two turns, a good maiden win, and an even better, perhaps, allowance effort. I think he's going to be a tough in here. He looks like a horse that's going to move forward off that race. So, you know, it's an interesting race. Again, these horses are going to have to prove themselves again and again moving forward, number-wise and competition-wise. They might not stack up with what's coming down the road. Fountain of Youth, we know we're going to see Forte, and I'm sure several other horses coming off of two-year-old campaigns or big maiden-slash-allowance wins that are going to be lying in wait for whoever emerges from here and goes on to the Fountain of Youth.
Well, and you would potentially even think that somebody from the West Coast might want to come to avoid this Baffert situation.
Yeah, with maybe Baffert. I mean, he's got so many out there. Might. You would think he's going to have to pair somebody off, or whoever he's with at that point. It probably won't be Baffert coming this way. The one who said it's conspicuous by his absence here was Dreaming of Kona. I thought they were going to bring him back. He was the beneficiary of that DQ in the Mucho Macho Man. Now that I notice that he's not in, I'm going to have to reach out and see. They may just wait. I mean, they are based at Tampa, and they may just
Sam Davis.
Yeah, they just may decide to have gone the Tampa route, Sam Davis and Tampa Bay Derby, instead of coming back over here. Although, you know, after I spoke to them the day after the race, they thought that he'd run so well over this track that they were leaning at that point to bringing it back here. So I don't know if there's an issue. I'm going to have to look and see if he's been on the work tab and maybe reach out and see, or have Marty do it. Marty is our Tampa guy, so probably have Marty do it.
Well, and the two Safis, anything, either one of these potentially emergent, Lord Miles or West Coast Cowboy?
Lord Miles, he was very, very happy with after his
59-3.
After his effort in the Mucho Macho Man. He said, I wouldn't trade places with anybody. He came running late. Was wide into the stretch. Now, look, there was a little bit of a pace meltdown, so you figured some horses were going to come on at the end. But he was very, very pleased with the effort. I see the fifth out. That work was with blinkers, and I just haven't seen the report, or maybe it's on tape on XBTV. But I'd be very interested to see what Mike thought about that work. He's definitely a big player in here. He among any of those horses coming out of the Mucho Macho Man, with that being only his second start, eligible to move way forward, especially if blinkers make a difference.
Mike, that Dreamy Kona, tell us about Aldana Spieth.
It was one of the greatest interviews I've ever had. She was the most bubbly, happy. Now, look, this was the biggest win of her career.
Right.
She owns a piece of the horse. Her husband rode the horse.
Yeah.
But when I got her on the phone, I mean, I couldn't get her off. It was terrific.
Oh, that's great.
It was a terrific, heartwarming story, and I hope things go forward with him okay. I don't know if you pull up on the screen. Does he show any works recently, like he's, come out of that race okay? I don't know. But I'll have Marty reach out, or I'll reach back out to her, and hopefully she's not here because they decided to wait, go to the Sam Davis, and then stay at Tampa for the Tampa Bay Derby, which makes sense. It's your home course, and you want to maximize your horse's chances to earn points to get to the big dance. And, well, boy, if this horse ever made it that far, and I don't know if he's that good, but if he ever did, the press is going to love her.
Well, that is tremendous, and she was this was a $50,000 purchase at OBS last year, and
I don't know if you read my story that I did, but she told me she was on the phone with them at the sale. And she said, I want a colt and I want a gray horse. And that's how they wound up buying this horse. She said, I don't like training fillies. They're too hard to train. So, but then, like I said, she and I guess Scott are part owners of the horse. So,
oh, that is great. With the Ballous, actually, Steve Ballous bought this horse. And, Aldana Gonzalez Racing and Lisa and Steve Ballous. And this was a horse that looks like the Hopples bought as a $14,000 Keeneland yearling, was late at the Keeneland sale in 21, and hip 3869, 14 grand, and then fetched 50, and looks like a real horse.
We'll see.
I love it. I'm glad I asked.
Like I said, the next step will be a step up. Maybe, you know, maybe if they stay at Tampa, not as much a step up, but the waters are certainly going to get a lot deeper, and we'll see. I guess he had trained like terrific. The Tampa clocker had called Mike Clocker here before that race and told him when this horse was coming over here how great the horse had worked coming in. And
59-1.
Yeah, and he proved it when he ran. Now you got his works up there.
Look at this. Last week, a 46-4.
Yeah, I mean, so I just guess they just decided to stay home and go to Sam Davison, and I can't blame him for that.
No, can't blame him at all.
So
excellent.
We'll wait and see. Marty will, I'm sure, have an update on this horse over the next week.
I will. I'm going to get Aldana Spieth on here. Mike Welch, everybody. We'll be back with Mike on Friday to handicap what is a fun card for Holy Bull. Always one of the really good three-year-old gatherings, Holy Bull Day, as we move now, shift from the Pegasus scene onto the three-year-olds.
Yeah, I mean, it gets pretty exciting from here in that regard. Every day, you know, when you get these three-year-old maiden races, colts and fillies, and
you never know.
We saw a great, you know, potentially terrific filly yesterday from Todd Pletcher.
Oh, yes, I should.
Ran to her. She was talked up all over the place, and she certainly certainly ran to her backing there at Even Money. Ran off the screen and did it easily. So. But again, any of these three-year-old races, especially as they start stretching out to a mile and a 16th, you never know what you're going to see. So, every day with that kind of stuff, not even stakes days, and, you know, it's always, always fun to come out.
Well, this was, the good magic, there was the good magic, but that was not the one. There was the one for LNJ. When did that race go? There it is, the 7/8, right? Bandita,
yeah.
Yeah, Bandita, and hadn't checked the number, 91 buyer.
Yeah, well, it looked like a 91 buyer the way she was running, so and she did it pretty easily. I think, what, she got 22 and change and had something left at the end. So,
huh.
Interesting to see, you know, where Todd points her next. Sure, she's not the only one of these in the barn, you know, moving forward in the filly division.
Wow.
But I'm sure Phil Serpy was watching anyway with his filly moving forward too after watching her work today. So a lot of things to look forward to in the next couple of months.
Mike Welch, everybody, who will guide us through the winter here at Gulfstream. Thanks as always. Hey, now we're talking. I love it. Mike Welch with a thorough recap on Saturday here, and now I mean we'll still do more tomorrow with Claude Ray and with Bruce Lunsford and more. And now I've got to get this Aldana Spieth, Scott Spieth's wife. And I'm very intrigued. Dreaming of Kona, right? Did I pique everybody's interest? I think we did. All right. John White's going to join us next. And we're well behind. I sort of should have expected that. Although we covered three races with Mike Maker, so that was productive. I guess that's what. Yeah, all right. We'll probably end up spending the last segment with John, and we'll save everything else for tomorrow. We're here every day. I'm not going anywhere. I still got plenty of things to get to, including I should do some I should kind of do some while I'm here some kind of family related visits. You know, the people. There's quite a few. You know, you'll recall when my mother, when my parents were at Boynton, when they had the place Indian Spring. And I would, you know, would come down, and we'd always get a chance to see the people from our Manchester, Connecticut, and there's fewer and fewer of them, truth be told. But you know, while I'm here, I should slip that kind of those kinds of visits in. Right now, we're going to visit though with John White, and we couldn't get John last week, but he's with us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Congratulations on Philadelphia. I'm in a survivor football pool that I went against San Francisco, and I've been going with San Francisco quite often in the last couple of months, so I felt like kind of a traitor to jump ship. But I really like the Eagles in that spot, and they're the deserving Super Bowl favorites in the betting. And last week, I really enjoyed the Howie Tescher tributes. Myself, I crossed paths with Howie a few times back in the winter of 1980-81 when I was a columnist at Keystone, which is now Parks, and Bowie in Maryland, and talked to Howie a few times. And one of the things that was mentioned in the tributes to him was how quotable he was. And boy, I'll second that for sure. He was just such a pleasure to talk to. And so articulate and so sharp. He's just one of those trainers that when you're a writer and you have to talk to these trainers and jockeys and owners and everybody, there's certain ones that stand out. It's like in Southern California, Daryl Vienna was always one of my favorites. He was so articulate and good to quote. And the late Eddie Gregson would be another one just that quickly come to mind. But then I was sent to Southern California to be a columnist alongside Mike Martin in 1981 in the spring. And in 1982, Howie Tescher sent out Weber City Mist for the Hawthorne Handicap Grade 3 race at Hollywood Park. And so I talked to Howie before and after that race. And then kind of interestingly, Howie Tescher kind of played a role in Angel Cordero Jr. working Land of Lucy before her very first career start. Tescher had sent Weber City Mist back to Southern California, back to Hollywood Park for the Grade 2 Milady Handicap in late June. And Dwayne Lucas, Land of Lucy's trainer, went back to New York to run Blushing with Pride in the coaching club American Oaks. And Lucas was on the red eye back to Southern California after that Saturday CCA Oaks. And on the plane was Cordero coming out to ride Weber City Mist for Tescher in the Milady. And Lucas had the idea on the plane when talking to Cordero. He said, I'm working a two-year-old filly tomorrow, and would you be interested in getting on her? I think you'd be in for a treat. And Cordero said, sure. So Cordero goes to the Lucas barn and gets on Land of Lucy. And I remember interviewing Lucas about this back when Land of Lucy was a two-year-old. And Lucas told me that he told Cordero that, you know, don't ask her too much in this workout because she's going to run next week. So he's working the filly, two-year-old filly, with a three-year-old colt that Lucas said, I thought he could really run. And so Angel goes out there in the work. And they broke off together, and after they went about 50 yards, Lucas told me, Angel was yelling over to the other guy. He says, hey, keep up, will you? But the other guy couldn't keep up with Land of Lucy. And Mary Perdue talks about this in her book, Land of Lucy, that came out last year. And Land of Lucy worked, get this, a two-year-old filly in June, 4 furlongs and 46 1/4 seconds, and Cordero hardly let her run at all in that work. 46 4/5 just like mostly under restraint. And Vandalucci comes out a week later, wins her first race in 108-1 by 7 lengths. And then a week after that, and that shows you how racing was different then, here's the 2-year-old filly running 1 week after her debut win in 108 and change. And she went in one of the most spectacular performances I've ever witnessed. She won the 6-furlong Hollywood Lassie Stakes by 21 lengths in 108 flat. And, of course, that put her on the map, and she ended up being the 2-year-old filly champion that year, but sadly died in November. So Tesher kind of brought back some of those memories because – and then later that year, Weber City Miss for Tesher did win the Beldame Stakes. And I was looking back – I've got all my Eclipse Award past performances. I'm sort of like you, Steve. I keep all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I was looking, and believe me, the 1982 past performances I have for the Eclipse Awards, pretty yellowed and tattered. And, but I noticed that I had marked that I voted for Weber City Miss for champion older female that year. She didn't get it. It went to Track Robbery, who was a Southern California-based mare trained by Robert Wheeler. But I actually voted for Weber City Miss for the Eclipse Award that year because she won the Beldame Stakes later in 1982.
I love it, and appreciate you listening to the Howie conversation. And you know, it's interesting. Having arrived here Tuesday night and doing the show Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and being on the track, then especially Saturday, especially down here, because of course the last 15 years of his life basically were spent here, and he was from here. So many people said the nicest things and you know, he's one of those people that you can't, you know, the proverbial, you know, you couldn't find anybody to say a bad thing. I mean, it and it's racing. So there's extra, you get extra credit for that.
That's a great point, Steve. There's no question about that. I remember Joe Hirsch once telling me, he said, racing is filled with knockers. Try not to become one of them.
We just had a knocker. That came up the other day, actually. It's very funny about the knockers. Well, thank you, John, for that. I, you know, there's obviously a bunch of things to talk about with you because we didn't visit last week, because then after Monday you had commitments the rest of the week. So there's some Eclipse conversation to slide in. I'm curious if you ended up doing anything. You watch the future wager pool very carefully, which we only touched on just a tiny bit last week. Some big prices now with these 40 entities, you know, now that it's gone from 24 to 40, there's numbers that are much more attractive than there have been historically. I think it came at a good time to get people, you know, kind of reinterested in tracking the monthly Derby pool coming out of Churchill. Take us wherever you want to go.
Well, I'm glad you brought up that future pool because that is something I've always enjoyed. And I really was interested. You make a great point that we're getting better prices because of the expansion of the individual horse fields the whole fields from 20 to 40. It's doubled. And it's actually also helped, for those like myself that sometimes are interested in the all others. You know, when they came up with Kentucky Derby Future Pool 1 back in early November at Breeders' Cup time, I heavily bet all others because my feeling is, even though they've expanded it to 38 individual horses, to me, their odds of being that accurate in predicting who's even going to be in the starting gate in early November of the Kentucky Derby on the first Saturday of May, I like to add all, and then you get all the Bapper horses at this time and the all others too. That's a huge plus. So if you're playing that now, you might say, yeah, but it's a short price. Well, I 4/5 under those conditions, I've bet a lot worse 4/5 shots than that one. And then in pool 2 later in November, it closed at 4 to 5 again. So I jumped right back in there again. And to show you how it's radically changed, when we came up with the most recent pool, a lot of those horses that were in pool one were absent in pool two. So, I mean, I really feel comfortable. Now, Forte turns out to be a superstar and wins, you know, that's the way it goes. But I really like having the numbers on my side in this. And your point about the value here in terms of expanding the field to 40, I had no interest in betting all others in this most recent one listed at 6 to 5 on the morning line. And I fully expected it to be even money, 4 to 5, 6 to 5. I'm watching that closely all day Sunday before the closing time, and it's 5 to 2. And I'm sitting there going, really? And I thought, you know what? Somebody might hop in there at the last minute, because that's been known to happen, especially on all others. Somebody comes in with a huge bet and drives it down. So I was watching as the clock was ticking, and it's like 3 minutes before closure, and it's still 5 to 2. So I hopped back in. It did dip down to 2 to 1, but it's a high 2 to 1, so almost 5 to 2. And once again, I feel very good about that. And it shows you need to be kind of alert. I had no plan to do that, but when I saw the price, again, if that all others is 6 to 5 or even money, I'm not playing it. But at almost 5 to 2, I'm diving in. So I also noticed that Steve Haskin, who I enjoyed listening to last week at Secretariat.com, he made the comment that Cyclone Mischief looks to be one of the biggest overlays for the Kentucky Derby future wager. He went off at 44 to 1, and I did put some money on him. So certainly I'm hoping he does well in the Holy Bull, because if he doesn't run well in the Holy Bull, then you kind of feel like, well, that future wager's gone down the drain. But I expect him to run well. He looks like really the horse to beat for sure in that Holy Bull.
Mike didn't have time really to dive in, and he only had the PPs for the Holy Bull. But Scully made the point 2 weeks ago into the weekend about that Chester skin, the violence, and that race. You know, there's always these undercard races that you know, trainers are kind of taking intermediate steps. Mark Cassie looks like he's doing the same thing with Classic Car Wash for Gary Barber, the Noble Bird gelding that is coming out of an allowance win at Gulfstream on the Tapeta, and actually is turning back really to one turn out of that race. Interesting with Jaramillo. I owe Mark Cassie a call. Maybe we'll get to Cassie this week. That horse looks like an interesting proposition in the swale. Excuse me, in this allowance race. But Chester Skin, Scully was all over, and I ended up, I think, at over 80 to 1.
Wow, that'll do. That's
what you want. That's what you want.
Exactly. I mean, other than the all others, I'm not interested. In fact, one of the horses I was kind of looking to play, and then I just didn't like the price, was Signator. And with Signator, I was wanting, you know, 40 to 1 or higher. And he went off lower than 40 to 1. So, I passed on him. So, I mean, you're running big prices, and you're getting a better chance to get the big prices, as you said, because we've got more horses in it. I'm so happy Churchill has done that. And, you know, I cross my fingers and hope that we'll see something in the future that they could even expand from 40, because that'd even make it even better.
The Eclipse Awards, what was your final analysis Thursday night?
Well, I was shocked that Flightline got Horse of the Year.
Yeah.
But, it was, I kind of felt, you know, there's been the criticism for the speeches, and I feel for the producer of the show from the standpoint that I know that if you kind of give these speeches an inch, a lot of times they're going to take a mile. So they really trust to keep your speeches short. And by the same token, I understand where people are saying this is the thrill of some of these people's lifetime, and to hold them to 1 minute is kind of harsh.
It is.
So, I mean, I see both sides of that, because like I say, on the other hand, you know, I thought Todd Pletcher had a great comment for Mike Rapoli when he said, you know, to get him to be speechless about running 1-2 in the Belmont Stakes, that was one of the accomplishments of the year. And, that was a very close vote, but I was glad for Todd that he got it, and very deserving. But Trad Brown certainly would have been a fine winner in that category, too. It was a neck-and-neck battle right down to the wire. And, you know, there weren't really any big surprises this year, I don't think. So I thought it was a very formful Eclipse Awards this year. And I thought that one of my favorite owners of all time, Mr. Ronas, just was so good as usual as he got up there and spoke on behalf of Flight Light. And then John Sadler, who I've known since I first came to Southern California in 1981, he was outstanding as well. And both of those were pretty brief, but they really touched on, you know, I like the way Sadler complimented so many people at the barn and so forth. You know, Juan Leyva played such a key role in that horse. When you go back and watch workouts of Flightline early in his career, how he was a runoff rank early in a workout. And by the time he got to the end of last year, he would relax beautifully. And that is much to the credit of Juan Leyva. And by the way, Juan Leyva, John Sadler's assistant trainer, I was the guy that proctored the written portion of his trainer's test that he took at Los Alamitos back a few years ago when I was working as a safety steward at Los Alamitos. And Juan Leyva, it wasn't the physical part of his trainer's test or anything, any other aspect of his trainer's test, but I was the one that supervised his taking of his trainer's test. He did a really top job on that test too, I recall. But he, you know, was a successful jockey himself, winning a Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint on Musical Romance. And as I say, he's been such a attribute to John Sadler as his right-hand man.
Very much so. And, you know, there's all kinds of examples of that and the transition. I mean, who's had a more high-profile transition from not just exercise rider but also jock than Rudy Rodriguez?
That's right.
You know, worked under Dutrow and you know, Rudy and his brother, but you know, Rudy, I know when he made the move and decided he was going to train, some people scoffed, and you know, there's still people I know that choose to be critical of Rudy, but
You mean knockers in racing?
Well, at this point, I mean, you know, his success is too sustained to take too many pot shots at him. The ability to get on horses. I mean, there's countless. There's countless guys that and gals that you know, got on in the mornings and. And then still, you know, still get on him. Brendan Walsh. What about Brent? Look at Brendan Walsh. He's another. Everywhere you look, Rudy Brissett. There's so many. I mean, and the ability, you know, to still get on horses, and you know, that knowledge. And that experience, you know, and then whether you're working as an assistant or whether you're making the calls, that knowledge is just invaluable. It's a perspective that, you know, not that horsemen that didn't ride and don't ride, not that they, you know, can't be successful, but it's another layer of comprehension.
No question about it. But we had some really good racing at Santa Anita over the weekend.
Yeah.
And while Baffert didn't win the Pegasus, the Funded, he did manage to win the San Pasqual, as you pointed out, with Newgrange. Well, that wasn't Baffert, of course. It's a former Baffert, now trained by Phil D'Amato. And by the way, Steve, one of the things, and I've said this before, that I really salute you every Monday. I mean, for years now. I tune into you for sure Monday morning, because your recap of what has happened, you know, the week before, mainly on the weekend, is you do such a good job on that. You really keep a person like myself or anyone up to speed on what's going on around the country, if not around the world. And that's just invaluable listening from my perspective. But Newgrange, I thought, shed some light into some of the behind-the-scenes things that can happen in racing. You know, as horse players, so often we're fixated on fire speed figures, thoroughbred figures, this and that. And there's a lot that happens behind the scenes or under the surface. And Newgrange is a great example of that, because Newgrange is kind of a quirky horse, evidently, because at the quarter pole in the San Pasqual, if you had live betting, his odds would have risen substantially, because it didn't look like he was going anywhere. But the key to the race is that Phil D'Amato has recognized this trait and expressed to Juan Gonzalez, who is just riding in superb form right now with a huge lead in the Santa Anita standings. And he told Hernandez, look, he said, when you get to the 3/8 pole, keep this in mind. This horse is going to like kind of stop running on the turn. And he said, so don't give up on him, because he'll re-engage. I promise you, he'll re-engage. And that's exactly what happened, is this horse came back on in the lane, and Hopper ran a really good race considering the long layoff for Baffert. And Parnelli ran a big race. You know, he's been a highly regarded horse all along, and he kind of popped up with a good effort here, so that was very encouraging. But Newgrange really got the job done, got a 96 buyer speed figure, and by violence out of an Empire Maker mare. And right now you have to figure he's going to be a prime candidate for the Santa Anita Handicap. And Little Red Feather, you know, the partnership involved in the ownership here. Billy Koch, I knew Billy Koch's relative that was on the board at Hollywood Park, and I would talk with him in the winner's circle all the time in the 1980s. Just a fine gentleman, Howard W. Koch. And Billy has done, and his group there at Little Red Feather, they just really done it so well. To me, Eclipse with the Aaron Wellman and Little Red Feather both have earned my respect tremendously. And here's another example. They privately purchased this Newgrange, and they're sitting pretty good right now for what looks to be a very productive 2023 campaign.
Well, you know, and Newgrange is an interesting story, because he, you know, you mentioned Baffert and part of the Avenger, you know, 3-year-old machine, which we'll touch on in a minute when we talk about the Lewis. But he went through the ring in the mix sale, in the summer mix sale, and Rockingham Ranch reached in for $325,000, and then subsequently Little Red Feather and David Burnson came in as well. And you know, this is a very nice way to you know, essentially go on with him. I mean, he came back in the Shared Belief, won that allowance race in November at Santa Anita, the Native Diver placement, and now the San Pasqual win. And, you know, we're so used to Phil D'Amato with the turf horses. This is I don't want to call it a rare main track type for him, but it is good that Phil gets a chance. And I actually owe him a call, too, from the last couple of weeks. We'll get Phil on maybe tomorrow. And this is a nice scenario for him to have a you know, an older horse on the main track. So
and D'Amato had people really chuckling after the San Pasqual, because he said, maybe I found the key to success to beating Baffert in a dirt race. That is to beat him with a former Baffert.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, you know, it's funny. The other stake earlier on the card, the Las Virginas, which started the Coast to Coast. And John, I mentioned it at the beginning of the show, and I haven't looked online, but I was curious. What did they pay yesterday and Saturday, the Coast to Coasts?
Well, I can tell you yesterday, I don't recall Saturday, because when I played it for the first time and didn't win, so I was just kind of sour about it on Saturday, like a true horse player. But yesterday, $4,019.10.
All right, and I'll find that I was shocked that it wasn't on the Saturday, for whatever reason. It wasn't on the Saturday chart, which surprised me. I'm going to try a different chart, actually, resource. But anyway, Faiza, and I actually used, I wasn't giving in to Faiza as the Las Virginas as a slam dunk. And I thought that D'Amato's filling in there had a look and had a shot. But that Doug O'Neill, the Doug O'Neill filly ran very well to be second. And basically chased her home right to the wire.
Well, and they had battled in the Starlet, and so that's a couple of tough luck losses for the O'Neill, but who has made a successful transition from the turf, obviously, into one of our top dirt three-year-old fillies here in Southern California. So certainly that Faiza, you know, dug in there again like she did in that Starlet. The one thing about Faiza is while I think she is really a quality filly, she really does need to step it up in the buyer department. She's still in the 70s. So, yeah. I mean, you're not going to be making any noise against the big girls around the country unless you get out of the 70s, that's for sure.
No, agreed. Pride of the Nile is the O'Neill for West Coast Stables that was the good second in here. Faiza, the Gervin, one of the early Gervins, and a Airdrie, and of course Michael Lund Peterson, who, you know, seems to always have one or two nice horses every season. Do you want to also, since we went in this direction, you should probably also talk about yesterday. And I did see the comment from Baffert after having a meltdown, won the San Vicente, that he will stay one turn. He's an uncaptured out of a put it back mare for Pegram, Watson, and Whiteman. And Faustin, who was kind of just kind of chugging along, he'll stretch out, and we'll watch for him probably in the San Felipe.
Yeah, having a meltdown. He does look like he's a sprinter. According to Bamper, physically, he has the look of a sprinter, and he's certainly been an effective sprinter around one turn. In fact, his only defeat in his life was to Cave Rock, who looked, you know, unbeatable and was 2-5 in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Well, he got beat to Forte. The Coast to Coast Pick 5 Saturday paid $11,699.50.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you. Now I'm really glad I got knocked out in the third leg, because if I had been live to Art Collector, I would have been live to Funded, would have been the best chance that I had, and obviously it wouldn't have paid anywhere near that with the Funded. But this is a fun bet, and chances are there'll be three Gulfstream races again on Saturday and two from Santa Anita when it comes to the resumption next week.
And I like it when, that's why I played Saturday. I like it when there's some stakes races involved. You know, I just feel more comfortable. And that's one thing I like when there's a mandatory payout in these jackpot pick sixes. I like it if there's maybe a stakes race or two involved. So I dived in, but I would have never had Art Collector. I'm one of those, I played Defunded, and I played Cyberknife just on the chance that, you know, he could overcome that post position. I don't know if the post really played a role or not, but I mean, he just never really ran in the race. So one thing about that, the television coverage too, is we talked all week, not we, but practically everybody was talking about how critical that run to the first turn and what was going to happen going into that first turn. And then you're watching it on NBC, and they cut to a ground level shot to where I can't figure out what's going on when they go into that turn. So it's so frustrating sometimes, these camera angles in these races these days. That, I mean, then they switch to a jockey cam live during the race. I mean, that's fine for replays, but for the minute I find my horse these days on some of these broadcasts, then they switch to another camera angle, and I can't find my horse. By the time I find him again, they cut to another camera angle. Now I got to search for him again.
it can be a little dizzying in search of artistic license being taken. For the aesthetics. I don't know. Give us one pan shot, thank you.
And then do whatever you want on the replay. Show them to your heart's content. That's wonderful. I have no problem with that. But when you're watching the race and you keep losing your horse because they keep changing the camera angle, it's just so frustrating.
I should also slip in, since we did give everybody the coast-to-coast numbers for Saturday and Sunday, I should mention yesterday here at Gulfstream, there was the force out of the jackpot, and the pool ended up exceeding $6,086. Five very formful results, except that the first leg produced a 22-1 shot. That won the first leg stat from Safi Joseph, and
a friend of mine hit that.
Nice.
And the key, the my friend singled the winner of that last leg. It was 2-1 easy. So
that was Mrs. Astor in the nightcap for Jonathan Thomas. The other winners paid 720, 540, 1140, 840, and 620. But the tricky horse was the first leg that I'm sure cleared out a bunch of people, but then it went pretty straightforward. John, just less than a minute left. There's going to be, as I said to Mike Welch, there's going to be real consternation over the four Bafferts being, the only participants in Saturday's Bob Lewis.
Well, I mean, it just doesn't look good, quite frankly. I mean, it just doesn't. What else can you really say? I mean, the San Vicente was bad enough, but at least Ryan Hansen had one in there. But, boy, it's, my wife, Tracy Gantz, was out there covering for the Blood Horse yesterday, and Baffert said to her, "Where are the other three-year-olds?" I mean, even he's kind of scratching his head going, "Where the heck are they?" And I said, "Well, right now they obviously are mostly, if not all, in Bob Baffert's barn. I mean, virtually all of them anyway." So
yeah.
My late father would throw a gasket over this, because he did not even like it when a trainer had two horses in a race and they weren't coupled. And I don't miss having coupled horses. I was never a big fan of that myself, and I always told my dad, you don't have to bet. If you don't like a race in which a trainer has more than one horse in the race, then, and they're not coupled, don't bet the race. I mean, you can do that.
This is not the first evidence of a problem in terms of concentration of talent. We've talked about it for years. So, John, though, I appreciate it. Glad to catch up on everything we did, and we'll do some more recapping next week, particularly the three-year-olds with the Withers, the Bob Lewis, and the Holy Bull.
Great, Steve, and once again, congratulations.
Thanks,
on those Eagles. They're quite a team, that's for sure.
I'm excited. We'll send you out into the race day. Limited opportunities, obviously, going on today. But back tomorrow with a lot more coverage from the weekend. Thanks to John and Mig and Mike Welsh and Mike Baker. Tomorrow, Shug, Bruce Lunsford, Andy Serling, and much, much more. Replay 6 to 9 here on SiriusXM, later at the website, archive, podcast, etc. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow. Yeah.
Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who you betting on?